You have questions, we have answers. This is Jay Muller.
And this is Ken Muller. Welcome to our show, all about real estate with Ken and Jane. Well, we have Jane, we have back with us our two great guests, Rob Edgar and Cassidy Klink with Peak Environmental. There's so much from last week's show that we didn't cover, gentlemen. So we thank you again for taking time out of your busy schedules to join us again as our special guests.
Thank you.
Thanks. We appreciate it.
Yeah. So we didn't get, you guys gave your bios last show, and we also didn't get, we'd like to learn more about Peak Environmental. So if you want to talk about what all the services that Peak does and, you know, its affiliation with the Nova Group, that would be helpful.
Great. So I'm Cassidy Klink, an associate with Peak Environmental, and I've been in the industry for about 20 years.
And I'm Rob Edgar. I'm a managing principal at Peak Environmental. And I've been in the industry about 32 years this December. And so Peak Environmental is part of the Nova Group. And the Nova Group is an international firm that does environmental work internationally. Mm-hmm. You know, we basically have a presence in almost every state in America. We conduct due diligence services that include property condition assessments, which is kind of the engineering side of what we talked about last week, the phase one environmental site assessment. They complete ESG services, environmental social governance. They do climate resiliency work for many clients, engineering services, construction-related oversight services. Mm-hmm. So the breadth of services that Nova performs is much wider than the services that Peak Environmental, the New Jersey company, performs. We perform due diligence work, but we also perform remediation. We do a lot of investigation and remediation work. We clean up properties.
Yeah. And this show, we hope to get some case studies, you know, about some of the cleanups you did. And, you know, that's going to be really neat. So the last show, we covered the phase one and the phase two and, you know, how they're very important for anybody considering a commercial purchase. I wanted to ask you guys, in your opinion, what do you think are the most pressing environmental issues that are facing New Jersey, where we all live?
That's a great question. And many of you have probably seen this in the news, contaminants of emerging concern, particularly something called PFAS. And so these compounds are everywhere. They're in stain repellents, non-stick applications, firefighting foam. And what I mean by everywhere is that they're in our food, in our water, in our clothes, and they're persistent in the environment and they're hard to clean up. And what I mean by that is that the cleanup standards are in the parts per trillion range. So when we talk about parts per trillion, we're talking about one drop of water in 20 Olympic-sized swimming pools. So that's really, really small amount. And we're tasked with looking for these compounds and potentially remediating them. And what's more is the science on these compounds is evolving. But thankfully, we've got federal agencies like the EPA, state agencies like the DEP, looking at the science, looking at the regulations, and litigating when necessary against the people that have produced these compounds.
Right. So I assume by now that these compounds, have they been banned by the EPA in the nation, or are they still allowed, or are manufacturers still allowed to put them in like nonstick cookware and the other applications you mentioned?
Right. So they've been around for decades and decades in different variations, and there's actually thousands of different variations of these compounds. So as these companies have found out certain versions of them are hazardous, they've tried to make different versions because we all need nonstick cookware, right? We need these applications. But they've been phased out over time, and all of these companies are looking for alternatives.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's enlightening. Yeah, so that's a very important issue to deal with, right? Especially if they have, I guess, proven health effects, right?
Exactly. And essentially, we go month to month with how the research is coming out and what the health effects of some of these compounds are. And new cleanup standards come out for some of these variations. And that works hand in hand with the labs, because if we can't detect these compounds, then we can't clean them up. So it's really an evolving field. And, you know, we're kind of at the forefront of looking for these things and trying to clean them up.
Mm-hmm. Have you encountered any sites that have these compounds in your practice?
Oh, absolutely. They're prevalent in the environment. in a lot of municipal water systems. If you go outside now and collect a water sample and look for these compounds, you're going to find them, even at low levels. The question is, A, is it from you? And B, is it an actual health issue for your property?
Right. Interesting. Yeah. Well, hopefully it's not in our bottled water that we're drinking.
Hopefully not.
Right. All right. That's what's very interesting. So let's now talk about something we didn't cover from last week's show. And I'm not even sure it's called the Preliminary Assessment Report, or known as a PAR. That's something that you guys have on your website. And I just want to understand what a PAR is and how that differs from the phase one report.
So a preliminary assessment report is New Jersey's version of a phase one. New Jersey has certain requirements to establish the history of a site and to identify areas of environmental concern. So the phase one that we talked about last week identifies recognized environmental conditions. Well, the New Jersey term for that is an area of environmental concern. When we talked about the recognized environmental condition, I used the analogy of, you know, this water bottle. If it contained hazardous substances, it would be a recognized environmental condition if it spilled or was about to spill, right? In New Jersey, an area of environmental concern is a little bit different. Anywhere where this is located on a site is an area of environmental concern, regardless of whether it could discharge, it has discharged. Just the presence of that petroleum product or hazardous substance constitutes an area of environmental concern. And the other difference, major difference between a phase one, again, last week we talked about how a phase one kind of looks outward in addition to inward. Mm-hmm. You look at your property, but you also look at what's going on around you because you don't want somebody else's contamination migrating onto your site. A preliminary assessment report is really just about your site, or it could be about a portion of your site. You could do a preliminary assessment on a room, or you could do a preliminary assessment on a 130-acre property. It's really New Jersey's tool to determine whether there are areas of environmental concern.
Okay.
On the property.
So when you do a report in New Jersey, if somebody hires you to do like a phase one, as we call it in New Jersey, you're following the New Jersey PAR guidelines, but what about the ASTM? Are you also including the additional information that, you know, an ASTM, like a 1527 phase one encompasses, which would be looking at the neighboring properties and getting the data from like the you know, surrounding gas stations within a half mile radius or whatever, a quarter mile radius, and all that stuff as well?
That's a great question. So what we do in New Jersey and what we recommend that our clients do in New Jersey, and this is really particular to commercial and industrial real estate most often, we recommend that these two reports be combined in what we call a combo report. So the phase one is for the site and the surrounding area and helps the purchaser to gain innocent purchaser protections at the federal level. Mm-hmm. The preliminary assessment helps them gain innocent purchaser protections under New Jersey's Spill Act at the state level. So by combining these two reports, a phase one and a preliminary assessment, you're basically getting both federal and state innocent purchaser protections. And I should say that on the preliminary assessment side of that equation, if you identify areas of environmental concern and you recommend that they be further investigated, you do not gain those state level innocent purchaser protections unless you take that next step and conduct that investigation of those areas of environmental concern.
Right. Yeah, and as I understand the law, the state can always be more stringent than the feds. So by what you're saying in the analogy you gave with the bottle of water, whereas on the federal level, if it has a hazardous substance in it, as long as it's concealed, as long as it's contained, it's not going to spill or it's not over by the table where it could totter. But in New Jersey, they're more strict. They say nope, any area of concern, if you have a substance that's considered hazardous under the Spill Act, that's called an AOC, an area of concern.
That's right.
So they're more stringent, which a state can always be more stringent than the feds, but never less stringent, right? But that makes sense, right? You encompass both because you want to give your clients the CERCLA protection and the New Jersey Spill Act protection as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right. So you just make it. So the report's a little bit thicker than the.
It's a few thousand pages thicker. Yes.
And when did this New Jersey Spill Act, this PAR, come into effect? How long has that been on the books for? Roughly,
Decades.
Decades. Yeah. It's been okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's which is good. I guess New Jersey wants to make sure. So anytime you do a phase one for an oil terminal, or there's every tank is an area of concern, right? Because theoretically they could spill. And even when I worked in the environmental field, I used to work on there were certain requirements for oil terminals and tanks. You had to have a spill control plan. That all came out of the Exxon Valdez spill in 1990 or 19, when that all promulgated all the regulations from the EPA and the Oil Pollution Act of 1990. That was that's when I was back in the field, not to date myself, but
been to a lot of those same terminals myself, so I understand.
Yeah. All right, that's very good. We covered that. So now we're going to get into this week's topic, which is the Industrial Site Recovery Act. And let's discuss what ISRA, as it's known as, it goes back to 1983, and what its purpose is in relation to all this, because we spoke about the last show about phase one and phase twos, which most clients have to do. But ISRA is a little bit of a regulation, I guess, where the state has its teeth in it and is saying that you have to do certain things if your industry is within a certain code or SIC code classification.
So in 1983, New Jersey took, I think we were the first state to take this kind of step. They created a regulation called the Environmental Cleanup Responsibility Act, ECRA. And that act was put in place because a company left the state of New Jersey and left behind an enormous amount of contamination, and the taxpayers were left to foot the bill to clean that up, and they impacted the environment. So this law is meant to cover industrial companies, manufacturers, companies that have a NAICS code, a certain classification code that says that what they do involves the use of hazardous substances and petroleum products. And this is a safety net. If one of those companies goes out of business or has a stock transfer that's significant, if 90% of their operations cease, there's a lot of different triggers. If the property that they are located on is sold, that's a trigger. That trigger is meant to trigger the safety net, where an investigation has to be conducted by a licensed site remediation professional to determine, through the preliminary assessment process that we talked about earlier. So 83 is probably that early date when PA started.
Yeah, I remember ECRA, then it became ISRA. That's
right. So from 83 to 93, the regulated community kind of threw up their hands and said, this takes forever, it costs a lot of money. And so the law was changed to ISRA in 93, which is a little bit less burdensome, but still is that safety net that's meant to catch these industrial sites before they skip town.
It makes sense. It protects the state of New Jersey and makes the good neighbor kind of thing, that
exactly.
You can't just skip town and then leave the buyer, even if the buyer willingly accepts the site, the state says no. If it's triggered, we want certain things. We want the environmental investigation done before the transaction. I guess we'll talk about that after the break. What it entails. Why don't we take a short break? We'll be right back after these messages.
Attention all investors. A two-story fully leased medical building is for sale. Good cap rate with long-term stable tenants. Corner lot with approximately 30 car spots, located on Route 33 in Neptune, just one block away from the Jersey Shore University Medical Center. For more details, please call Ken at 908-337-9448. That's Ken at 908-337-9448. Prime commercial property situated directly off Route 18 in East Brunswick is available for sale or lease. This exceptional two-story building features a fully updated interior with a bright and airy ambiance, creating an inviting atmosphere for businesses, with an opportunity to present your business to more than 50,000 passing vehicles per day. To find out more, contact Ken at 908-337-9448. Impressive second-level office suite in excellent condition is available for lease. Approximately 2,400 square feet consists of private offices, conference rooms and kitchen, and private restrooms. Perfect for attorneys, accountants, or any office professional use. Situated in prime location on Route 130 in the Lake Farrington Plaza Business Park, in close proximity to major highways including Route 1, the New Jersey Turnpike, and Route 287. For more information, please contact Ken at 908-337-9448. That's Ken at 908-337-9448. You are listening to All About Real Estate with Ken and Jay Muller on 93.5 FM, 1450 AM, Fox Sports, New Jersey. Now let's get back to the show.
Okay, welcome back to our show. We're joined with by Rob Edgar and Cassidy Klink of Peak Environmental. And guys, one more time, please give your office phone number for our listeners out there.
Sure, it's 732-326-1010.
Okay, guys, we have a lot more to cover in a limited amount of time. So let's wrap up with ISRA, and then we'll get into the brownfields and then some of your case studies. So you want to say anything else about ISRA before we move to the next topic?
So once the Industrial Site Recovery Act, ISRA, is triggered, there are mechanisms. There are exit ramps from the ISRA program. If you can show that you didn't use a significant quantity of hazardous substances, you can get out of the program. There are codes that, you know, may on the surface say that you're subject, but when you dig a little bit deeper, you find out that you did something a little bit different. There's exit ramps to the program there. And then, you know, the last thing I'll say is that if you have a property and you're trying to sell it and it has an ISRA subject tenant on that property, or maybe the whole property mm-hmm. is an ISRA subject operation, there's a mechanism called remediation certification that New Jersey has in place where you can estimate what the cost to finish the investigation and the cleanup might be, put that pot of money aside in an account that the Department of Environmental Protection could have access to, and then the closing can occur. You can sell that property mm-hmm. once you've gone through that remediation certification process, and then either you or the purchaser can then just finish that ISRA case with, again, a licensed site remediation professional.
That's great. That answered my question. So the sales can go, transactions can go to sale. They just have to, the DEP just has to have a fund set aside in their trust to monitor it. Okay, that's good news. They're working with the businesses to, mm-hmm. you know, in common, which is great. All right, let's talk about the Brownfields program. That's another program. I guess that's a national program that was set up, that was established by the EPA, where I guess these brownfields are known as abandoned or underused industrial sites that were just kind of just lying vacant or, you know, just abandoned, I guess. So let's talk about what the incentives are for to develop a site. If you're a developer, why should you choose a brownfield site?
Well, first of all, a brownfield site, like you say, is underutilized or abandoned, right? So it's might be in prime territory where you might want to put up something of value, but you see it as a contaminated property, and these programs are set up to provide financial incentives to say that, yes, I would like to pick up that site and redevelop it. And, you know, the ultimate goal is to return these properties to the tax rolls. You know, we want to increase property values of not only that property, but the surrounding properties. You can bring jobs to neighborhoods by redeveloping these sites and just simply removing eyesores and contamination from neighborhoods. So cleaning up a brownfield site is in the best interest of everyone.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And I think just to add, I think according to EPA's website, they have about 450,000 brownfield sites in the country. So I don't know how many of those are in New Jersey. A lot of them. But that's that number to me, that's an astounding.
440,000 of them.
440,000. Yeah, so we got 10,000 that are spread through the rest of the country, right? But that's a big number. But like you said, that's exactly what it increases the tax base, and you use the site, and also you protect the environment, because then you don't have to develop other land that's not, you know, that you can use the existing industrial land and use it for another purpose instead of, you know, plowing or cutting trees down somewhere else. So you're helping the environment in many ways by
exactly.
Using
and you might be revitalizing an entire neighborhood by getting rid of these kind of properties and putting up, you know, housing or businesses, etc. And, you know, in terms of New Jersey's role, I always term it that, you know, New Jersey is one of the oldest states in the union. It has a long history of industrialization. Of course, we have a lot of brownfields properties, but we also clean up a lot of them, too. Mm-hmm. So in terms of incentives, there's a lot out there. So first and foremost, you're probably going to receive a deal on actually purchasing the property. It's not going to be the full price that you would normally see if it was an already redeveloped piece of property. So right there, that could be a deal. But in terms of incentives, the state has many grants and loan programs where you can receive money for redeveloping the property, investigating the contamination, and even remediating the contamination. Also, there are programs that have tax incentives, too. So you can get money on the front end and the back end for redeveloping a property like this. And in terms of the DEP's role, a potential property purchaser can enter into a pre-purchase agreement with the department and set up extended time frames to investigate or remediate the property. So there are incentives on the monetary side, but also on the environmental side to clean up sites like this.
Mm-hmm. Great. And so it sounds like it's a win-win. Do you guys want to share with us a case study you had? You've worked on many brownfield sites, or one that's Peak has done, you know, in a particular county, if you have one in Middlesex or Union or, you know, somewhere in Central Jersey?
Right, right. So we do hundreds and hundreds of these kinds of properties. So one of them is in Essex County. It's a multi-parcel mixed-use property. And essentially, the developer decided to purchase these parcels and combine them into one with the goal to make a residential piece of property, which is great. And when we took a look at the properties, did our due diligence for the client, we found almost 40 areas of concern. Mm-hmm. So that might sound like a lot, but this is pretty typical for properties like this. And in terms of areas of concern, we also end up finding any previously unknown areas of concern, such as buried underground storage tanks that nobody knew about. And, you know, you demolish a property and you find surprises. And mm-hmm. these are the kinds of surprises you might find. Not a big deal. Those tanks were removed, soils taken out, and the soil remediation is done at that property. And we have a groundwater situation still with chlorinated solvents. Like Rob was explaining previously, those kinds of chemicals come from properties such as dry cleaners or mm-hmm. Parts usage or parts cleaning facilities. And right now we've done a pilot scale or small scale groundwater remediation at the property. Construction has already commenced, and you know, this property will be done before we know it. And as part of it, there's always a precautionary measure, especially for residents. So a passive vapor system is going to be installed at that property so that any vapors mm-hmm. that might be underneath the ground don't get into the building and affect people that might live there.
Mm-hmm. Great. And how long roughly will this take to complete the restoration, the environmental restoration? A few years or?
Right. So the primary remediation should be done next year. But as Rob was saying previously, and you were yourself, groundwater remediation takes some time, because what you can do is you do a remediation or initial remediation and you knock down those concentrations. So those very high concentrations come way down. But then what we like to do is let the natural environment reduce those concentrations over time. So there'll be a monitoring program of, you know, probably between 5 and 10 years where we go out to the site, we collect groundwater samples, and we test to see what those reductions are like, and then you get to your eventual remediation goal.
Right.
But the property is perfectly safe to live on.
Very analogous to what Rob said about the medical example. You know, usually if somebody has, like, quote unquote, a cancer, after the cancer is removed, you still do follow-up testing to make sure it doesn't come
exactly.
back. So you guys are doing very similar testing by having the monitoring wells in place to make sure, even if you reach your goal, you want to continue to monitor it over a few year time period or whatever the case may be, to make sure that you're totally clean, you have a clean bill of health.
Exactly.
So that's, yeah.
That's a great analogy.
That's great, yeah. So that's, yeah, that's wonderful. What the funding for the brownfields, is that a fund that's set up by the EPA, the federal level, where the funding, or is each state get allocated a certain amount to the, you know, the DEP?
There are funds that you can get on the federal level, but primarily we look at funds on the state level, because the state has it's in their best interest to have these local properties turned around. And if you go onto the New Jersey EDA, Economic Development Agency website, they have dozens and dozens of programs that you can look into and what the requirements are, how much money is available, et cetera. And we have experience getting people those funds.
Right. That's wonderful. Yeah. Yeah. All right. How about another case study you guys want to give anything else we've covered, whether it be the phase one, phase two project or an ISRA one that you worked on under the Industrial Site Recovery Act?
Really quickly. Yeah. So Just on a personal level, this kind of brownfield remediation is what we've been doing for decades. Mm-hmm. And it personally, it's what gets me up in the morning. You know, this the reduce, reuse, recycle, that reduce, reuse piece of taking what's a contaminated property, not producing any tax revenue. People are avoiding the property and turning it into a productive property that's producing a lot of tax revenue and making everybody happy from, you know, the township the property is in to the current owner and the previous owner and everyone around the property.
Yeah.
That's really the best expression of what we as environmental consultants do. And in my experience, I worked on one of the first New Jersey brownfield redevelopment projects that went into the state as an application to be reimbursed. And at that time, there was a 75% reimbursement. So this project was in Monmouth County. It was a very large, I think it was 132-acre manufacturing facility. It had lagoons. It had over a mile of subsurface tunnels below the manufacturing facility.
Wow.
So there were a lot of, you know, we measure areas of concern usually in tens, and this had like 100 areas of environmental concern. They were investigated. They were remediated. And that property was redeveloped for residential use. And as I said, 75% of the money that was spent to do that came back to that developer. And it was a fantastic project.
And then it created a tax, whoever moved in there, they became a tax revenue source for the community, for the town. So it's, and then an employer as well. And then it's already, the land is right there. It's in an existing industrial area. So it's used for its, you know, intended purpose,
right,
which is great. Yeah. Let's talk also about your designation as an LSRP. I wanted to emphasize that you're a licensed site remediation professional. So that gives that, a lot of listeners may not realize that you have certain, that the state, the DEP has given you, entrusted you guys with a lot of authority where the state doesn't have to be involved in the investigation as long as an LSRP oversees the remediation, right? So if you want to say, we have about 2 minutes left, so.
Right. So essentially, that license is the highest license for an environmental professional in New Jersey. We have professional engineers out there. So LSRP is a professional environmental consultant in New Jersey. So we're tasked with essentially being the DEP in a lot of circumstances. Mm-hmm. We oversee the investigation and remediation of contaminated properties. So, you know, there are a lot of regulations that we have to comply with, and that's what we do for a living. We look at a property, we figure out how do we investigate this, how do we remediate it, figure out the cost for everyone, and we do the implementation. And at the end of it, we report on it and send something to the state and say, this is it. We've complied, and we'd like to close this property.
Wow, that's great. Well, you guys, this show has been so informative. We want to thank you both again for coming back the second Sunday to further discuss with us these environmental issues. And once again, Peak Environmental, besides being very highly qualified environmental professionals, they're a very big supporter of the East Brunswick community. They sponsor a lot of events. They're very they donate their time and efforts to the East Brunswick Chamber of Commerce. So once again, guys, please give your phone number, and I want to thank you again for your time.
You're very welcome. So Cassidy Klink, 732-379-0672, cassidy.klink@novagroupgbc.com.
Rob Edgar, 732-570-4577, rob.edgar@novagroupgbc.com.
Give them a call if you guys have any need help, environmental help. They're the best.
That's right. They are the best. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a great weekend. Bye now.
Take care.
You have been listening to All About Real Estate with Ken and Jane Muller, airing every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 93.5 FM, 1450 AM, Fox Sports, New Jersey. For feedback and suggestions for future topics, go to their Facebook page, All About Real Estate with Ken and Jane, or email them at realestatewithkenandjane@gmail.com, or call 732-898-2266.